The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews and industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dream.
Hey, what up, podcast time? Let's try and make this intro short. By the way, the featured guest, certainly we will categorize this into the Power Player episode. I hadn't spoken with John on the podcast in years. I actually did try to get him on one other time, but communication failed. Anyway, I solved the communication conundrum and was chatting with John. He, of course, is just so amicable and said, of course, I'll be on your show. And also, we're going to do a little hype in of the imaging days. So why don't I start there? In case you are unaware, John Frost is one of the featured speakers at the Imaging Days coming up in, near Amsterdam in Haarlem. That's in the Netherlands. Yeah. Anyway, October 5th and 6th. We're like, what are we, 3 weeks away? Woo! And one of the featured speakers, John Frost. So if you still haven't gotten your tickets for that, I highly recommend it. The other Americans that are on their way would be Kelly Doherty, queen of all of imaging, really the leader of all of imaging in America, but definitely VP imaging of iHeartMedia. Anyway, Dom Nero, producer at Hot 97 New York, one of the truly legendary radio stations. Dom will be on the show here coming up very, very soon. Like I said, I'm going to fire off a lot of episodes this month before we get to the imaging days. Anyway, so that's the imaging days. Theimagingdays.com is the website. I think I might have mentioned that, but you know, check it out. And if you are in the area, well, then I definitely recommend taking a train or a plane or driving on over to Haarlem and showing up, because it's hugely worth it. I just had such an amazing time last year. I can't wait for this year again. If you'd like to reach out to John, John's all over Facebook. You can find him there however you find. I'm not really the Facebook king. Most of my stuff comes from Twitter. So anyway, if you want to find him on Twitter, double check. Frostbite987. Frostbite987 on Twitter. Otherwise, I suppose I'll come back and wrap it up in the outro, but let's get right to it. No demo, no audio needed, I would say. I think we take the bulk of the time and just really dive in and hear from the one and the only John Frost. You know, a person that a lot of people consider to be their hero, I would say I could use the word legend, and I don't know if it makes him blush because I can't see him right now, but I will say his name and introduce him to the show again, Mr. John Frost. Hi, John. Thanks so much for being on.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
I had this written down as a question. I'm gonna hit you with the heavy one right out of the gate because I did sort of mention it there.
Okay, good.
Are one of those people that people say, you know, if they're listing their heroes, you come on to many, many people's list, obviously in the radio imaging world, but radio in general. How does that honestly make you feel? What do you think of when you hear that?
I am super flattered to hear that I've had influence on people's, you know, work. It was literally just people before me when I was just listening to the radio and had nothing to do with the business that made me go and do it, you know? I mean, it started just being my dad up in Alaska, but he was doing little skits and stuff that none of the other radio stations were doing, and I just thought that was so cool, even though that was old-style radio, you know, doing radio plays and, you know, what have you. It just was so cool that he was just making stuff up and doing voices and making radio fun and to listen to and entertaining, and so he influenced me, and I'm so happy and flattered that I was in a high profile position at K-Rock in LA when people got to hear my stuff and emulate my stuff and even question the way they were doing things. It makes me feel really good to have any kind of, you know,
yeah,
any kind of impact on anything in life before you pass.
right. Leave a mark. It's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if it's just a little tiny radio mark. And, you know, it's not like you're famous. You're famous with some radio people who work in the background.
I don't know. Would you rather be famous in general for basically nothing, or would you rather be famous? Or would you rather be famous amongst your peers in a very, you know, not a very, but in a small field?
Well, it matters to me what we do, making radio fun and making radio interesting. It just, that matters to me. So it's kind of been one of my passions. So I guess, you know what, I'll say the correct thing and say, yeah, that's much more important than the money and the women and the fame.
Yeah, yeah. Before I go back down the road of more serious questions, although I'm just really interested in this one, you started doing stand-up a while back, and I hope you're still doing it because I know you had some success, but is that still going for you, and how is it going?
No.
No?
It's not still going. There's a long answer and a short answer. I'll give you both because you can edit it later.
Yeah.
The long answer is I really hate having to do stuff in front of a live audience because you don't get to edit it. And I've just, you know, I didn't, if I stood out at just doing things live on the fly, I'd be probably a really much better radio DJ or announcer than I am. I'm not that good on the air live. I'm much better when I can just sit in the back and then rethink the punchline and then, you know, rework it. It's like every time I tell a joke, I can probably think of a way I could have told it better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you have that chance to make it better in the mix, as it were, then, I don't know, I come off a lot funnier when I can think of a funnier punchline. I'm not as good just flying off the, you know, flying off the top of my head. I mean, I really admire people like Adam Carolla and you know, Jimmy Kimmel and people that I've worked with along the way that were so quick at coming up with stuff that there's no way I could have fixed it in post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just can't do that. So that's the long answer. The short answer is I really hated doing comedy stuff because then in LA, it's just like you're in a band and you have to promote it even to get a gig. You got to get 10 people in the door for the comedy club. And I felt like I was pestering people on, you know, Facebook or whatever to come to my show. It's pestering the same people, whether they've already been before or not, you know, just pestering everybody. And I hate it when people do that to me on Facebook.
Yeah.
So I just hated doing it to people. So I'm back in the, you know, there is a possibility I'll go and do a little bit of stand up here and there, but I really wasn't that good at it. Not as good as, behind the scenes stuff.
Well, I think a lot of people would agree with me saying, you know, hearing your work over the years, it did sound like an obvious, second step for you, another avenue to go down. It seemed obvious.
I guess if I had done it, I wish I had started it 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? When it would be relevant. Now I've got to just go up there and do old, fat, pale, diarrhea, pooped my shorts jokes because I'm old.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
And that's good. People will point at you and laugh. I mean, there's no doubt, but I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's cool.
I wish I'd started that a long time ago when I first said, I should do comedy. Nah.
Let's go to Frostbites because, you know, one of the most prolific imaging services that's hit the world, and it gets back to that whole legend sort of hero thing, but it also gets into sort of a copycat thing. But start with the beginnings of it. If people didn't hear our first interview or if they simply don't know a lot about you yet, they just know of you, was Frostbites the first online imaging service?
To my knowledge, it was, and it's possible if somebody were able to research this or knew better that maybe there was another one that was on before, but it was right at the forefront of delivering imaging by, you know, internet.
And it was that constantly updating, system.
And it was, everything was delivered pretty much either down a network line, I guess is the way Premiere was doing it, or imaging stuff was delivered by CD.
Yeah, CDs.
You know, through the mail or through FedEx or whatever. And so it had never occurred to me until like Napster that the internet could just be a file delivery service, you know? And that was going on, and it wasn't my idea to do it. It was Premiere's idea to do it, and I was just very, very excited, you know, to give it a go. Frostbites has been around since I left K-Rock in 2000, 2001. I was at K-Rock in L.A. for, 13 years, and then I've been at Premiere Radio Networks doing Frostbites since 2001, so that's, I guess, 14 years now. And it's been tough and amazing and weird, and all I'm trying to do is just, I'm not trying to reinvent anything. I'm just trying to make stuff fun or make stuff interesting, you know, and make stuff weird.
You've obviously had to evolve the service over the years. I mean, things change. I don't know if you can think of, people could be interested in, what were some of the bigger changes or evolutions you had to make over the years? Things that really stand out as like major issues that or things you stumbled into over the years?
Most of the changes of direction are just you get tired of a style or you see or hear something else that might work and mm-hmm. you try that. When I first started it, we didn't really know what it was going to be. I think it was just a bunch of sound effects and yeah. a bunch of little music pieces and things. Then I started adding, I don't know, whatever else I could think would be funny, and then topical, timely comedy bits and you know, intros to songs and just whatever else we could think. We started to morph it to basically what I heard back from whoever was subscribing. Anybody, you know, hardly anybody takes the time to go and say, here's what I wish you'd do.
Yeah.
Here's what's wrong with this. But that is really, more than anything, the most helpful stuff is when you get feedback from subscribers. And I think that probably helped to shape directions it's gone and just my taste or distaste for the way I was doing it has, you know, changed the way I do stuff. I used to be way too fast, I think, in my delivery just because I was hyperactive in every possible way. Mm-hmm. So I've slowed that down. I realized the beauty of using silence to punctuate points.
Yeah.
Which is no secret. People do it in everything from electronic music to movie trailers to, you know. My style, my delivery's changed. Gotten a little more mature, I think, but I try to still do really wrong off color stuff here and there if it has to do with the news or there's a point.
Is there anything that you won't touch or will you basically, anything that comes to your head, you'll do,
yes,
put it up?
There's plenty.
There's plenty
I won't touch. Some of it I used to touch and now I just won't touch because I'm a little more mature.
Yeah.
I've never really touched too much, at least, you know what? People might disagree with me. I don't think I've ever really touched race stuff.
Okay.
Very much. Maybe. But I don't really make fun of black people. I mean, how do you do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I've never really made fun of gays. I've played gays. I don't know. I'm pretty liberal, and so I'm pretty forgiving of people. Asians I stay away from. Well, maybe I don't. I don't know. You know what? I think I withdraw that whole answer.
Right, so maybe there is actually no place you won't go. Okay. Got it.
You know what? I used to like do things about people who are mentally handicapped, and I think that I've gone away from doing that because I don't think that's fair or nice.
Yeah.
That's the new.
I suppose at the end of the day, if you're not serving a purpose, even if it's funny to you, there's no sense in doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? You can literally do if you want somebody to act a certain way, you can do that, but you don't ever want to call them retarded or you don't want to,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just laying a label on someone that's so, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
There's bad words that I will definitely stay away from, and there's subject matter that I'll definitely stay away from because I just can't see a point.
Is there anyone up the line, you know, in your world? Because I think a lot of people might think of you as this completely standalone entity that sits, at least here's how I picture it. You've got your studio at your, you know, lavish estate, and it's like a cavern, and nobody comes in or out, and there's nobody to kind of check your work or to you know, do anything, to tell you yes or no on anything.
I wish there was. Yeah, yeah. I wish there was more checking of my work.
Okay. So is that kind of how it is then, where basically Frostbites is John Frost in a little cave, and it goes onto the site when you say it goes onto the site, and that's the way it runs?
That is definitely mostly true. I don't have anybody that tells me I can't put something on the site.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or I really, unless I send things on to, I mean, I admire a lot of people that I work with, just in and outside of the corporation. And so if I do something, I will send it around and see if they have better ideas for how I could have done it better.
You do?
Oh, sure. I think, especially if you're not sold on something you've just finished and you're like,
yeah,
it's kind of funny, but it's also long and blurry and sad, you know, so you send it around to other people that might be able to help you. And I've got a stable of people who I highly respect.
Mm-hmm. Are there other people
like Ryan, like you, for instance?
Yeah, right. I get the email with content all the time. Although I know of a couple that you're probably referring to. Are there people, you know, that might be actually running competitive services that you're actually friendly with, and you might bounce ideas off of or learn things from, or just sort of chat with?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. Just I don't know that they're competitive services. I mean, there's a lot of them under the blanket of Premier. There
sure.
are people that I really, really respect. You can't not respect, in my opinion, you can't not respect Eric Chase and Nick Daly and
yep.
and Forrest Martin and Miles Lifko at Kiss Now and,
yeah.
and I mean Will Morgan up in San Francisco, and you know, there's lots of people at and I really like Jason Gart and what he's doing down in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a competing company. To not like something because they're your competitor is ridiculous. All I draw my you know my motivation from and my inspiration from is just hearing other people, big or small, doing things that I hadn't thought of yet, or things that sound funny or creative or smooth, or you know. So I'll listen to everybody and I'll draw motivation and inspiration accordingly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I've heard this answered. It's very curious to me how people answer this. You know, I'm talking legendary, you know, 38 years on a morning show in the Fifth Market, and still they reminisce about their days working in Market 280, you know. So for you,
right.
Do you ever look back on some, you know, maybe your days in-house at K-Rock or even in Alaska and go, man, maybe I could just go back to that. Like, does that ever happen for you, or is that just not a sensation you get?
I think that everybody has that, don't you? I mean,
I wonder
even
that.
if you're not in the business, if you're out there and working in an office in a cubicle, you're starting to make okay money and stuff. You still remember when you were 19, living on your own, just barely getting by, eating Top Ramen. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and going out every freaking night because it was the thing to do. You know, you're maybe 21 because, you know, that's old enough to go drink. So that was just it, though. You never felt more alive than when you were just barely squeaking by, having fun, no real commitments, no real, you know, anything dragging you down
mm-hmm.
at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You were never freer and probably, you know, barring, you know, incest or anything else that might have happened at that time, probably the happiest time of your life.
Yeah. And
when you were finally out on your own and just trying to figure out how to make it work.
And then taking a step away from that, looking back at what you just said, doesn't that actually seem weird, though, that, you know, a John Frost who's running a Frostbites and is, you know, copied everywhere and all this, isn't it kind of weird to hear someone say that?
That they kind of miss the carefree years
yeah.
where they could... No, the movie Citizen Kane, he's dying and he pined back to his yeah. childhood sled. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just what you do. You look back and you're like, I really enjoy where I am now. I really enjoy knowing all the people I know and having tried all the stuff I've tried. And I mean, I really enjoy where I am. I love it. But that comes with lots of pressures.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That you didn't have when you were making minimum wage and on an AM radio station in Anchorage, Alaska or something,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
It was just, life was more exciting then.
Yeah, it makes sense. I don't want to get too ethereal, but I do appreciate getting a little ethereal with you. Anyway.
This is the most serious interview I've ever done. I don't know why you caught me at either a good or bad moment, depending on your perspective.
I like it. I don't want to just talk about noises and zings and dings and, you know, fart jokes. You were at K-Rock, and it's funny, you know, for me, I grew up in L.A., and I loved Kiss FM. I was, you know, a nerdy pop kid, but I loved
right.
K-Rock, loved it. You know, so I didn't know that you were influencing me a decade before I even thought about getting into radio. And at that point—
How was I influencing you if you were listening to Kiss?
No, I was listening to Kiss and K-Rock. I didn't know if I made that clear.
Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah, they were my two stations.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I was a Kiss guy. I loved, you know, Rick Dees' Countdown on the Weekend.
Sure.
But, you know, in the evening, get home from school, it's always K-Rock. It's always throwing K-Rock. Love Lines, you know, all that.
Yeah.
So the point is, you were influencing me for when I got into radio more than 10 years after that. And then
yeah.
all these people are always saying, you know, how you know, you were the influence. They're copying what they heard on K-Rock, whether it be now or 10 years ago or almost 20, you know, 20 plus years ago, whatever. I'm wondering,
right.
I've seen you answer this question too about how, you know, if it's done well, you like it. If it's not, eh. But really let us into the head of somebody that is copied. Not a lot of people will be able to say that.
I think when I was young and stupid, I thought it was bullshit.
Uh-huh.
You know, it kind of pissed me off. I'm like, this is my style, me. But really, what was my style? Just being fast? What, sounding like a cartoon? I think cartoons had that down before I came along. I mean, if you think about it in hindsight, what really do you have to be mad about?
Sure.
Really?
To compliment you, you were, at least as far as I know, kind of the first anti-radio radio sound. You know, where everything was sounding big and, you know, the radio, you were the guy who was like, nah, how about we do it more like average guy would say it or nerd would say, you know.
Yeah, I don't think I even get credit for that. I mean, I'm sure that there's millions of examples of that happening before I even came along, whether I know those people's names or not,
yeah.
Whether I knew I was even borrowing, you know, from yeah. those people or not. I'm sure it went on. I mean, Lenny Bruce was anti-establishment, you know, in the 60s. So it's, and you know, we were trying to be rebellious as a station. I don't think I get complete credit for that, even putting together the image that K-Rock, you know, was going to portray. I think they just were carefree and didn't give a shit. And so I came there and tried to amplify that, you know? So I don't know what I can really claim as,
sure.
as, you know, sure, I brought some really cool, unique styles and just some easy things. Well, maybe easy, maybe not easy things to copy or emulate. I'm so glad that happened though. I really feel honored by that now. It's like the opposite of when I used to be upset by that.
Yeah.
Some of my best friends, I at times have heavily copied, but hell, I heavily copy from all my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really do. If something's working on the radio better than the way you're doing it somewhere, it might behoove you to try to at least listen to it and figure out why, you know, or how they're succeeding in places that you're faltering.
Yeah.
I mean, to not do that, to even if it's your direct competitor, God forbid, you know, if your direct competitor is somehow sounding smoother or funnier or pulling things off in a way that you're not sure your station pulls it off as well, it's worth listening to. They're owned by a different person. Who the hell cares? Listen and see what they're doing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All they can do is give you realization and help grow you. And whether you decide to emulate it there or not, maybe down the road you'll understand why that worked better.
Here comes my just awesome...
I'm not saying everything I did worked better, because a lot of it really didn't work in hindsight.
Yeah. Well, I guess to be good at anything, you got to fail, right? I mean...
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're going to do it right in the public eye, everybody's going to see it and hear it.
Yeah.
But, you keep on going, because if you're not trying shit, you're not trying shit. And uh-huh. that is what that is. So
I don't know if I covered this. And I was just going to say, you're going to see my awesome interviewing skills, as I'm now just going to go backwards. But I don't remember if I covered this in the past. When you got to K-Rock in 87, can you just give us a snapshot of what was happening there? You know, what did the station sound like? What were you told to do? You know, what were the goals? Or was it in complete disarray, man, and it was just like, do whatever you want, John?
Oh, my God. Okay. It was, It was really hard when I got there. I came from Alaska. I came there to make probably $20,000 a year in L.A., you know.
Yeah.
And I was making that in Alaska. So I was losing money when you got, you know, sales tax all of a sudden, and you got state income tax. And I was losing money to come there, but I knew I was at the ceiling in Alaska. And the place had just been bought from a one-person owner,
yeah,
by Infinity Broadcasting, which is now CBS. And it had just been located to these offices, which were the bare minimum to make the deal go through. You know, they basically leased some office space, jammed the whole radio station in there, and it met the minimum criteria so that it could go through. Then the guy could get paid by Infinity Broadcasting. So I was in a place where they'd thrown in a new general manager, a new promotions director, and me. And everyone else was the same people. Sure that all three of us were corporate drones. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't matter that I came from Alaska. I was clearly a spy for the corporation. No one trusted me. I didn't know what I was doing yet because I was from Alaska, and I thought I knew what new wave and alternative music was at the time, but I had no idea. So I had this huge learning curve. The program director hated me from the very first time I got there, and I couldn't really put anything on the air to his liking. So it was in disarray. I championed through it because I was glad to be in LA, and I didn't really do anything of quality for the first year.
Wow.
I don't think.
Well, what was your mentality like in that year? Did you think at any given moment you would just be thrown out the door?
I didn't have much fear of that because the general manager, the person that hired me, was the new person that they had brought in to oversee this incorporating of K-Rock into the Infinity fold. And so he was the one I had the contract with. I had just a 1-year contract, but he was like, "You're good. You're fine. This is going to be great. You're going to do awesome." And he saw, you know, he had enough fires to put out in the early years there. But I felt like I was safe. And I don't think I even knew that everyone thought I was a spy until much later.
Oh, okay. So you didn't even know that. Okay.
So at the time, I was just walking around all happy going, woo, 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 boing. You know, yeah, trying to think of some way to do something good. And my, you know, I didn't even come down, I don't think, with that cemented a style. I think in the first year to 3 years is when I really started to get a style that sounded, you know, enmeshed with K-Rock.
Yeah. Well, that was actually going to be my next question. At what point did you really, maybe it wasn't an instant, but did you really think, wait a minute, I think I figured out what I am, and I think I figured out what I'm going to make the station, and I actually think it's going to really, really succeed?
I don't think there was ever an aha moment like that. I really don't. I think I was growing to fit K-Rock, and K-Rock was growing to fit me a little. And then we got a new program director, and now K-Rock's going a different way. I mean, I think it slowly evolved. I wish I could have said that, especially wish I could have said that I was the mastermind, but I, you know, it all just kind of grew, and I figured out how to make a fart noise sound like this, and then we're like, hey, I like it when the fart noise sounds like that, and then, you know, you kind of evolve and figure out what you want to be. I mean, the only, probably about 89, 90, we got a program director which called it the world famous K-Rock, and that's the only thing that has really stayed the course since then. And that wasn't mine, but that was so full of itself and so tongue-in-cheek anyway that it totally worked with our image. And that's still around. They're still calling themselves that today. Mm-hmm. And why not? It's the best, you know, slogan you can ask for. Everything else, though, changed. We changed a million, you know, slogans and directions and other stuff. And so it was all just a feeling out process.
When you got there, I mean, you've become very well known for your style as far as your voice, I should say. Your production, you know, there's no argument there. And your voice is now very well known. At what point did you, okay, it might have been from the beginning, but at what point did you really, you know, you personally become a part of that brand? Was it right from the beginning? Was it later?
I think that would have been later. I got there in 87.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything good until at least 88. I think Nirvana came around 1990 or 91, I think, or at least Guns N' Roses did. Let me think. I'm trying to. I started to become synonymous in the early 90s. I don't think. You know, and I, again, at the time, I was the don't care read and stuff that I was using back then was not my baby. I stole that from, or something similar to that, from Keith Eubanks at the time.
Mm-hmm. I thought he might be the name you'd bring up. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's very little that I could think of that I could patent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when I became. I think I started to win awards and stuff, and then it became a pain to go and try to figure out what would fit into award ceremonies, and it seemed really masturbatory to be always worried about trying to put your promos in or do find a commercial that you can do so that you can go into the commercial category. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just at the end of the day, ew, you know?
Yeah.
So I think at about that time, and then I was starting to get like inside radio, or people would do interviews with me and stuff. So it must have been, I don't know, early to mid-90s, must have been somewhere in there, must have been where I started to get recognized.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Well,
on a larger scale.
I'm glad we got to dive back into that history there, because not everybody's heard the stories, and for me...
Yeah, I'm sure that there's no way that anyone's listening this far into the podcast. I hope you have a skip forward, you know,
yeah, they get fast forward. Nobody's fast forwarding, though, I promise you. Let me switch gears completely and talk about the thing that will then lead us into your seminar or a presentation at the Imaging Days.
Sure.
In a word, it's writing. Let me just make this statement, and then you can answer why or tell me to screw myself or what. But I feel like so many people love to say how important writing is. They love to say it. But yet so few resources and so little time is put into it.
Yeah. It's hard to picture. I mean, for some people, it's hard to picture how they're going to write a scene or something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Some people are just used to saying stuff in logical order. And so finding quirks. And I mean, you know, writing comes and goes, too. I mean, it comes and goes for me. One of the best writers, two of the best writers I can think of right now aren't me. I'm thinking of Miles Halifko at KISS FM, and who else was I thinking of? Oh, Stax at DC 101.
Mm.
They're writing really well, and they're thinking of things outside the box really well. And part of it's youth and enthusiasm and love for the craft, and part of it's just natural talent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so writing comes and goes, and it's hard to teach. And I wouldn't even know what the first pointer would be. I'm not even sure if when I go to Imaging Days in Harlem, Netherlands, I'm not even sure if it's going to be about writing or timing, so that you can actually make a bad script work as well, because everybody's going to have bad scripts that you can't change. And that's the important thing with spacing and timing and reproducing stuff and moving stuff, is that you can make a good script work, but sometimes you can make a good script suck just because you didn't quite deliver it right. And making the bad ones that you have to do work on some level, even if you have to rethink it somehow, that's the beauty.
Yeah.
That's as important as writing, I think.
You kind of went to where I was going to go, in that it's, you don't really think it can be taught, but if we were going to try and learn to be better writers.
I'm sure it can be taught.
Sure.
I take that back. I'm not even positive why I said that.
Oh, no, that's all right. Maybe you're not the teacher, but, or you know, it can be, but I understand. I guess I would just ask, you know, if you have thoughts on where one might start, you know, if they really want to just go full bore and become the best writer they possibly can, where one might start.
If you're trying to write comedy, I don't have any, you know, I don't have any instructors that I can, you know, forward you to. But if you're trying to write comedy and you don't go online and just watch stuff on Funny or Die.
Yeah.
And just watch, just read stuff on The Onion, you can get an idea how they're thinking. You know what I mean? You can even do this watching your favorite, show on TV. I mean, Tosh is writing, people write really well. Yep. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can find examples of well-written comedy everywhere. Writing things that feel, that's going to be a little bit different. Maybe go watch some Aaron Sorkin show. It's just you've got to somehow engage the listener on a human level. I mean, that's the point of all radio and successful radio is you got to somehow engage them on a human level, whether it's the Jack FM type delivery of just pointing shit out, you know, or whether, you know, whether it's stand-up comedy like Seinfeld used to do, and it's just, you ever notice, you know, I mean, somehow you got to get something where they say, oh yeah, I've thought that, you know what I mean? So you got to treat them as a human, because they are, whether they're really listening carefully or not. The only thing they can really bond with is something they identify with. And so you got to hit them on some level. Either it's thinking the same things are funny or thinking that the same things are bullshit, you know, whatever it is, you got to relate to your listener on a human level, and that's never changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Quick side note, since you did mention his name, are you a fan of Aaron Sorkin, or did you just randomly pick his name? Or B, if you are, what's your favorite Aaron Sorkin written material?
I don't know if I'm not a
you're not a big fan
boy. Or no, I'm a fan. I'm not a fanboy. I mean, you see good TV and then you like it, and I'm liberal, so he kind of fits me in that way. Or semi-liberal. I don't know. I really like the very beginning of what was that? The Newsroom?
Yeah.
That 2-minute tirade he went on to set up the basically set up the whole series was incredible writing. Go watch that.
Like in The Social Network, everything Mark Zuckerberg, everything he said, I thought was, biting, pretty cool. And then for me, there was like 2 episodes of The West Wing, the end of season 1 and the beginning of season 2. I think are just...
I'm sure. I mean, nobody can write a speech, like Aaron Sorkin. I'm surprised he's not writing political speeches for actual politicians.
Yeah, I didn't mean to go on a Sorkin tangent, but I did mean to lead that into, are there any other just off the, people that influence your writing, specifics, but you mentioned some general ideas on how to, see good writing, but anyone that stands out to you is like, man, that dude knows what he's doing.
Writing wise,
yeah.
And I know there's a lot of it going on, and I mean, and if I don't bring up a name, it's not that that person's not a good writer. I may just not have read or heard much of their stuff, but let me see, people that influence me in writing.
And I don't even mean like radio people necessarily. You already mentioned a couple, Stacks and Miles.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just saying, just in general in life, just so people can kind of get to know you a little bit.
Yes.
Anyone.
Okay, I'll give you some examples.
Yeah.
For movies, I'll give you some examples. I like Ethan and Joel Coen, who've done everything from Fargo to, just all these things. And their quirky style, I think, I really, really identify with.
Mm-hmm.
For telling truth and just the lost nature of today's youth, if you will, I kind of like Lana Del Rey's lyrics that she writes.
Oh, wow, okay.
And she's a musician. And she's also hot, and that's fine, But she writes really kind of shady shit, if you listen to it.
Uh-huh.
And it's obviously honest. Let me see. Who else do I like writing-wise? I used to love The Replacements and Paul Westerberg a lot. Mm. That was back when I was a youth. Who do I like on TV right now? Can't think of any good writing examples I like on TV right now.
Do you watch the show Mr. Robot by chance?
No, but I keep hearing that's the thing to be watching.
Yeah, man, I like the writing of that show. I like the pacing. You've talked about pacing a little bit here. I really enjoy the pacing of that. It's a bit of a ripoff.
Yeah, no, what I've read about it, I really want to go and jump into that and binge watch it.
Yeah, the theory, I mean, the theme of the show is essentially a Fight Club ripoff, but it's totally... the more detailed stuff is totally different, but the writing, the pacing, boy, oof, it's, that and like The Walking Dead.
Yeah, nobody's ever really mentioned the pacing part of it to me. Yeah. I will take a, I'll take a look at that because I'm interested.
Yeah.
I've been interested in trying to start that for a while now. I'm not going to say it. It's going to sound all dipshitty.
Say it. We like dipshitty.
I really loved Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, man.
I really liked that movie. It was written okay, but it wasn't that. It was the cinematography was amazing. But the way they told the story without dialogue blew me away. Like right at the very beginning of the frickin' thing, you're just thrown into a world that's clearly weird and effed up and you don't feel comfortable and it's bizarre and off-putting and it just felt like that world probably would have felt if you lived in it. And so that blew me away. And filmmaking wise, I thought that was unbelievable.
That could be a good takeaway in writing and even for radio, writing copy for commercials or writing copy for imaging. It's as important to write the background information as it is the dialogue.
Yeah, maybe so. I didn't say that, but yeah.
I think that could, sorry. John Frost just said, no, but I personally think that might be an important thing people could focus on.
That's very possible. It depends on how much room you have in these, tiny, tiny things you're writing nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Imaging Days 2015. I know Anthony, I was there last year, and Anthony, I think, had, you know, come to me about you a long time ago. And I'm like, well, if you don't get him, you're a fool. But I know you're going to be there. You're going to be doing a panel. We already mentioned it a little bit, but if you'd like to kind of highlight what generally you plan on doing.
I'm very excited to be there. I've never, bringing my fiance. She's never been out of the country, so she's very excited. We're going to go to the red light district. Wait, what were you asking? No. I'm really excited to do it. I don't even know. I honestly don't know if anybody even knows who I am there. You know what I mean? I know some people that are transplants that used to be in the U.S. know. Some people might know who I am, but it feels like a different world over there, radio-wise. And yeah. So I'm as excited to meet people and hear what's going on as I am to tell them what I know. Ooh. And like I said, I'm going to probably be talking about timing an awful lot. I know I'm going to be talking about the use of silence to make things better. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I'm not sure. I'm really excited to see a couple of the other seminars, the other panels.
Yeah.
Not panels, I guess. What are they? Sessions.
Yeah, session.
I've called them. Kelly Doherty. I'm really excited for the Niels Franken one.
Yeah.
Because I guess those guys went off last year.
Niels and Chris. Yeah, they closed it down. And I mentioned this in an interview I just posted with Anthony Timmers about that was probably the biggest moment where the entire room went, oh, like, oh my, how can you do that? When they were showing one of their sessions. It was pretty cool, though.
Wow. I'd like to see that. That sounds amazing.
Well, man, awesome. I know you are a busy individual with lots of creative writing and such and noises to make. It's a real honor to have you on again, John. I really, really appreciate you being on the show again.
Thanks for having me on again. And I'll, you know, anytime you want, I'll do it again.
All right. We'll see you in Amsterdam. Thanks, John.
All right. Thank you.
Lock it up. Thanks to John. I say that because I truly mean it. And also my mommy told me to say thank you when people do nice things. So anyway, thanks for the time. John Frost at Twitter. Where's the Twitter? That's it. Frostbite987. I knew there was numbers. I couldn't remember which ones. At Frostbite987 is his handle on Twitter if you'd like to reach out to him there. He's all over Facebook, so you can go hunt him down over there if you'd like. Also, theimagingdays.com, I believe, still has a cool little video he posted for his upcoming presentation at the show, October 5 and 6. I suppose for the Americans, it might be just a little bit late to take a random trip to Amsterdam, but maybe not. Some of you can do that. I can say this for sure. The show is highly worth attending. It's also like 15 minutes from Amsterdam, which, you know, pretty cool city to go to. For those of you that are listening a little bit closer, jump on a train, a plane, or a car, or whatever you got to do. Just can't recommend the show enough. Coming up, Dom Nero. Going to revisit with Dom. Highly worth a second interview with Dom to see how things have been going at the mighty Hot 97 over the last few years. The last time I spoke with him was actually in the Hot 97 studios, so that was pretty awesome. For now, we'll just have to stick to our down-the-line type interview that we're used to. Anyway, still going to be a great one coming up here, actually, as soon as possible, like a week, maybe. A week from now, perhaps, because he's also going to be at the Imaging Days, and I want to hype that show one more time with Dom. Otherwise, I'll say this again, I don't know when I mention it, maybe every episode, maybe not, but if there's people that you think I need to talk to, please send them my way. I'll just, you go to the website, Brian Cooney will tell you that here in a minute, ryandreen@gmail.com, that's the easiest way to contact me. I get emails all the time. Just had another one from a presenter in Australia who used to be in the imaging world and then is now, you know, on the air, but found my podcast. And I was like, man, that just makes me excited about imaging again. It makes me excited about imaging. So anyway, glad to hear from everybody worldwide. Thank you. Okay, I think now it would be a good time for me to say bye.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.